Good evening for WBAI News in New York. I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, December 15th, 2016. Beginning with international news, an operation to evacuate civilians in Aleppo is underway. The evacuation is part of another ceasefire deal in the war-torn city in Syria. Hopes are rising that thousands of besieged civilians can finally leave the last rebel-held areas. Daniel Johnson reports.
After emerging from a meeting of a humanitarian task force at the UN in Geneva, UN Special Advisor Jan Egeland announced that civilians may finally be able to leave the last opposition-held areas of East Aleppo. Five previous attempts to make this happen have failed, Egeland reminded reporters, but this time things could be different, as Russia had expressly invited the UN to assist with the evacuation.
We stand ready to accompany those who are being evacuated, not only from East Aleppo, but all the way to Idlib, that is controlled by armed opposition groups, that will be the destination of most of the people evacuated.
Outlining the deal, Egeland said that the operation would involve the evacuation of the wounded and sick, other vulnerable civilians and fighters. Russia, he continued, had confirmed that the process would be swift, unbureaucratic and non-intrusive, and also that no harm will meet those who are evacuated. To date, the UN has not been able to gain access to the many thousands of people who are still believed to be in the last remaining parts of opposition-held East Aleppo. But the organization and its partners are assisting some 50,000 people who've made it to government-controlled areas of the city after fleeing the war zone and fast-shifting front line. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Today, the Kremlin denied it was behind the alleged cyber attack that led to the leak of Democratic National Committee emails. WBAI's Rebecca Miles spoke with Bill Binney. He is former technical director at the NSA and an NSA whistleblower. She spoke with him on whether it was a hack or a leak of DNC documents.
I saw the letter that was posted on the website Consortium News by you and other intelligence veterans, who wrote that allegations over the release of the Democratic National Committee emails from WikiLeaks had to be a leak, not a hack. Why did you stress that?
Because they haven't come out with the evidence to show the tracing of the data going from the DNC server to, for example, the Russians or anybody else, or going from them then to WikiLeaks, which is a high-priority target for NSA in terms of the network monitoring. So, and NSA does have the basic collection of virtually the entire network worldwide. So why, if they're going to allege something like that, they ought to show the trace route and the path of when and how and through which path those packets went from the DNC to the Russians to WikiLeaks. And they failed to do that.
The CIA has failed to produce the documents that say that.
CIA wouldn't be doing it. It'd be NSA. I mean, NSA,
right.
They don't have anything like the capacity of NSA. NSA owns the network. When you send something across the network, you're sending it into NSA land, and they own everything. So they've got tens of thousands of embedded implants in terms of hardware and software around the switches of the world, and they've got traceroute programs by the hundreds all around on the switches, and they're collecting at different points throughout the entire network, redundant collection all over the world. So there's no excuse for them not to have both the content and the ability to traceroute anything going across the network.
But in a case like this, normally would the NSA even comment on something like this?
Well, if they're going to, I mean, they've done it before. They trace routed packets for a Chinese hack into the United States several years ago back to a specific building in China. So
yes.
If they're going to do it then, why don't you do it now?
Especially
now when this is a very serious allegation.
Yes. So how credible do you think this accusation is then?
I think it's politically motivated.
And for what purpose? I know that Robert Perry today in Consortium News had suggested that this might be a way to move from, for instance, the war on terror to now a new Cold War. which guarantees military budgets. Is that
that's certainly behind a lot of it. I mean, certainly Hillary Clinton and a number of people were going that way, and certainly the military-industrial intelligence complex wants to foster that, because that means that, you know, for a new Cold War, that would mean trillions of dollars going into the coffers of those people. So they would be certainly advocates for this thing. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of vested interest to keep this kind of thing going.
Yes, yes. And then in the White House press, the White House press secretary, Josh Ernst, said yesterday that there were private reports about these alleged leaks or hack earlier in April. What would he mean by private reports?
I have no idea. I mean, I guess they were talking about comments being made from WikiLeaks. I don't know. I know that WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, has already said publicly that it was not the Russians, it was a leaker inside. So, I mean, and there are any number of other people who are coming in saying that kind of thing. If CIA is alleging a different story, then they need to produce the evidence like they did on the Chinese hack before, years ago. They should do it this time. And it's not a problem. It's not that we don't know they're doing this. Everybody knows they're doing it. Even the Russians know they're doing it. So, you know, there's no reason to withhold this kind of information, especially if they can prove it. And so far as I can see, they won't even brief the House Intelligence Committee on the evidence they're using to make their statements. That tells me that what they're saying is a pack of crap, you know, that they're just concocting these things to support the existing administration, and also to support the move toward a new Cold War.
WBAI's Rebecca Miles speaking with whistleblower Bill Binney, former technical director at the NSA, the National Security Agency. As saber rattling continues, the White House press secretary today accused U.S. media of essentially acting as an arm of Russian intelligence. In other news, a federal grand jury convicted Dylan Roof of all 33 counts in the murder of 9 parishioners at the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina. The jury reached its verdict after less than 2 hours of deliberations. They convicted the 22-year-old white man of hate crimes and other charges. Family members of victims held hands and they squeezed one another's arms as the verdicts were read. One woman nodded her head every time the clerk said guilty. Jurors convicted Roof of hate crimes, obstruction of religion, and weapons charges. The panel of 9 white and 3 black people will reconvene next month to decide whether Roof faces life in prison or the death penalty. The jurors heard from witnesses who testified that Roof made multiple trips to Charleston in the months before the June 2015 attack at the Mother AME Church. They also heard from 2 survivors. Roof's attorneys called no witnesses. Prosecutors said in their closing arguments that Roof was filled with hate and has already confessed to the FBI to his role in the shootings. Defense attorneys portrayed Roof as a suicidal loner who never fully grasped the severity of what he did. At the trial, the 22-year-old's 2-hour confession was played in its entirety for the jury. His defense attorney put on no witnesses. Yesterday, one of the 3 survivors testified in court, saying that Roof said he had to do it because blacks were taking over the nation. Roof wants to serve as his own lawyer in the penalty phase of the trial. Prosecutors are expected to seek a death sentence. The same jury will decide if Roof gets the death penalty or life in prison without parole in another phase of the trial, which begins on January 3rd. In Denver, a rural Colorado school district has decided to allow its teachers and other school staff to carry guns on campus to protect students. The Hanover School District 28 board voted 3-2 last night to allow school employees to volunteer to be armed on the job after undergoing training. The district's 2 schools are about 30 miles southeast of Colorado Springs. It takes law enforcement an average of 20 minutes to get there. Other school districts in Colorado and in Texas, Oklahoma, and California have also allowed teachers to carry weapons. This since the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. The vote last night comes on the 4th anniversary of the shooting. Officials say the proposal has been in the works since June, and the timing of the final vote was coincidental. Today, Donald Trump, president-elect, announced his pick for Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke. Zinke has repeatedly targeted decisions by the Obama administration to regulate or limit fossil fuel production. He opposed the temporary moratorium on new coal leases, as well as regulations meant to reduce methane emissions from oil and gas wells. Montana has an extensive coal mining industry, and Zinke has been a staunch supporter of that industry. The Trump transition team says Representative Zinke has spent his time in the U.S. House of Representatives building an impressive portfolio on interior issues. They range from federal mineral leases to tribal affairs to public lands conservation. As Interior Secretary, Zinke would oversee 75% of America's public lands, as well as a host of agencies. These include the National Park Service, the United States Geological Survey, Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. A divestment plan to defund the Dakota Access Pipeline has been taking place in New York City. It's being led by the Standing Rock Sioux Native people, and it targets the pipeline's major creditors. According to Food and Water Watch, 38 banks finance companies building the pipeline. This includes the very company where Rick Perry, who was just nominated as Energy Secretary, sits on the board, Energy Transfer Partners. It owns a controlling three-quarters interest in the Black Snake. This week, New Yorkers brought their protest to the doors of Citibank and to Wells Fargo. Organizers want people to take money out of banks which fund the Dakota Access Pipeline. WBAI's Earth Mom has more.
In front of Wells Fargo, activists gathered with water protectors to hold the bank accountable for funding the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. Cody Two Bears of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe came from Cannonball, North Dakota, to be here in New York to join local protesters.
I'm just here to help the process of divesting the banks. Wells Fargo here, we're standing out in the corporate headquarters in New York City to pass the message on why water is so important. Right now, Wells Fargo is funding the loan to the Dakota Access Pipeline project, which is going a half mile north of my community in Cannonball, which is on original treaty territory land of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of the Ochete Shikoye, our Seven Council Fire people.
Cody will be attending a fundraiser this evening at ABC Carpet, along with Chase Iron Eyes and Mark Ruffalo.
And the fundraiser is going to entail a sustainable green community in my community in Cannonball and on Standing Rock, because it's one thing to protest about it, it's one thing to talk about it, but where it hurts them the most is we need to start being about it. So that's definitely the message moving forward is, you know, if this country is not going to move forward with green renewable energies, then let's do it in native country and then show this country how to live.
With the incoming Trump administration, Cody says the native peoples throughout the United States have always needed to re-educate federal leaders.
To let them know of understanding of who we are, our ways of life as our native peoples in this country, and why it's so important to protect and preserve what we have left moving forward. So it is always an uphill battle for native nations and native peoples of the United States that live in this country. I always say we're dual citizens of this country because I have an enrolled enrollment number from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and also a Social Security number from the United States government. So, you know, we are dual citizens of this country, but I can tell you that moving forward, that if this administration's not going to do it in this country, that we're going to do it in the next 4 years in native country. So we're going to set an example for this country and how to live again. If you look at the histories and the atrocities of the genocides of native nations and native peoples and past histories that go back 1,000 years when the European settlers came onto this land and discovered land when we were the first peoples of this land here, we taught them how to live. We taught them how to eat. We taught them how to grow foods. We taught them how to build and live on this land. And if you think about it again, we've come full circle again. Well, we're going to have to teach this country again how to live once again, starting a native country. So that's what I see today.
Marty Goodman with the Transport Workers Union, Local 100, stands with Cody Two Bears. He was in North Dakota at Standing Rock, standing up to Energy Transfer Partners, the company building the pipeline.
Well, that's where union people belong, standing with the oppressed. And it was my duty, I thought, to be with the people that are resisting pipelines and a corporate invasion of sacred land guaranteed by the Treaty of 1851. So I was there to stand with the Sioux Nation there and all the other peoples that were there, over 100, who are standing in unison against this intrusion on their land and this new extension of a filthy, dirty, disgusting pipeline that is threatening our country and the water in the around the Sioux Nation, and ultimately threatening the environment of the entire planet.
Goodman says instead of pipeline jobs, what's needed is to fight for green jobs for workers.
People that are working for the pipelines don't deserve to be laid off. If we replace them with renewables, they should get new work at union wages working for renewable energy.
What's your take about plans that the upcoming Trump administration has of making the United States a very big energy producer to sell our energy to the world?
Well, you know, you could blame everything on Trump if you want, but the Obama administration has been waging a war for oil in the Middle East for almost a decade now, and of course Bush before him, we carved up the Middle East just to get oil profits. So Trump's attitude towards the climate and his climate denial is nothing new for corporate America. We just got to get out in the streets and confront this rotten system and save our planet, as I said before. This is no joke. All the climate scientists agree that the Earth is in great peril, and to stop a catastrophe, we've got to stop Trump, stop the fossil fuel industry, and take the system down.
It's very, very scary that Donald Trump and his advisors, specifically his advisors, are telling him to take the reservations back and turn them into oil and gas zones.
Josh Fox, fighting to defund Apple, says your money isn't sitting in the bank. It's being used to fund fossil fuel projects that violate indigenous sovereignty and destroy the planet.
And really, this Trump administration is about privatizing. And the ultimate privatization, the currency of our whole world, is oil and gas right now. That's what we're trying to change. So we're here at the Dakota Access Pipeline, defund Dakota Access Pipeline protest at Wells Fargo to say we have to take our money out of those banks, out of Wells Fargo, out of Chase, out of Citibank, out of TD, because that's not money in the bank anymore. That's a form of violence. Those are funding militarized police. They're funding oil spills. That's what's happening in your bank account if you have a bank account at any of those banks. Make no mistake. You can't say, oh, well, I just have $5 in there. No, you have five bullets. You don't say, oh, I have $100 in there. Oh, I only have that. That's all I've got in the bank. No. You've got 100 gallons of oil that's spilling into the Yellowstone River if your money is in those banks. So go to defunddapple.com to defund, to make sure you divest yourself personally. In New York, there's a lot of good options. There's Amalgamated. There's Carver. Carver's a black-run bank in New York City. You could take your money out very, very easily. But what I want to say about the reservations is I think this new movement led by the indigenous people of the United States of America, right, led by the people at Standing Rock, by the native tribes, inclusive of people working on environmental justice and racial justice and fracking and the climate, that is stronger than Donald Trump. That is stronger than their will to try to destroy the very fabric of this country. And if they try to do that, it's going to be a kind of war declaration on the people of the United States. And we will fight back. We won't fight back with bullets. We won't fight back with guns. We're going to fight back with peace. We're going to fight back with demonstrations. We're going to fight back with prayer. We're going to fight back with all the things that won that victory at Standing Rock. So, you know, look, we are the anti-Trump, and there's no way they're taking us out.
For more information, go to defunddapple.org. Earth Mom, WBAI News, New York.
Give us courage
to right the wrong,
to right the wrong.
Now lift us up.
Lift us up.
Love, triumph in our land.
In our land.
Lift us up.
Lift
While activists continue to push to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota, the fight for climate change continues here in New York State over the Spectra Energy Pipeline. It's making its third attempt to run a pipeline through the Hudson River and another pipeline called Pilgrim. It also threatens to cross the Hudson. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Here in New York City, a citywide advisory is in effect today until 6 p.m. This as a bitter blast of cold weather is coming. It's bringing with it threat of some snow for the first part of the weekend. Wind gusts could top out at 50 miles an hour. Today's high is expected to be around 29 degrees. Really, though, it will feel like it's in the teens. The cold temperatures continue overnight with a low of 15 degrees, wind chills as low as zero. Snow is in the forecast for Saturday morning. It's expected to change to rain, which will continue until Sunday afternoon. This evening in the freezing cold, there's a candlelight vigil for the homeless children who were killed in a radiator explosion last week. The Ambrose children, Ibanez and Skyly, were killed by scalding steam and boiling water from a faulty radiator which exploded in a cluster site shelter. Homeless families and their allies are gathering right now outside an Upper West Side school. That's where Mayor de Blasio is holding a town hall meeting. That's at West Side High School, 140 West 102nd Street here in Manhattan. Picture the homeless, faith leaders, and others are calling on the mayor to repair all cluster site buildings and bill the slumlords who own them. And they are demanding that the mayor shift resources away from an expensive and unsafe shelter system in favor of cost-effective, common-sense housing policies. Cost-effective is not the term one would use for how the city is housing homeless in New York City hotels. A new report by Scott Stringer, New York City's comptroller, shows that the cost to taxpayers to house homeless in commercial hotels is $400,000 a day. His office's analysis shows that the average daily rate per hotel room has been rising substantially from roughly $160 to over $193 a night. More than 800 room bookings, though, are going for $400 or above, including some that cost taxpayers $629 per evening. City Hall has pledged to end the use of commercial hotels, but they are still being used extensively, especially on a cold evening like tonight. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. Locally, the family of Romarley Graham is still seeking justice. They rallied with supporters today at One Police Plaza for transparency. It's the fifth holiday season for the family without the young man. He was killed by Officer Richard Haste in his own bathroom in front of his six-year-old brother and grandmother. This after Haste and other cops invaded the Graham home on the pretense that Romarley had a gun, which he didn't. A pretrial hearing was held today as to whether Richard Haste and other officers involved in Romarley's death should be tried together. The family and supporters want NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill and Mayor Bill de Blasio to release information on the investigation into the death of Romarley Graham. And they want them to stop hiding behind an arcane law recently brought back into use. It lets the administration hide disciplinary charges in cases like this. The family and advocates want transparency, and they also want to know which charges are being brought against not only Richard Haste, but also the officers who invaded the Bronx apartment.
There were 12-plus officers that were engaged in illegally entering Romarley's home, killing him, assaulting his mother and grandmother, detaining her, his grandmother without access to her attorney, and engaging in a whole other range of misconduct. They are all collecting city paychecks. They are all still on the NYPD.
Yulsan Lim is with the Justice Committee.
Richard Haste and Scott Morris have received incredible pay raises since they killed Romarley. This is not okay. We want to be very clear that the only outcome that we are okay with is that Richard Haste is fired and that all of these other officers are off the force. New York is not safe when there are officers like this on the police force, when the commissioner allows it, and particularly when the mayor allows it.
It was on February 2, 2012, that Romarley Graham was shot dead when cops unlawfully entered the home without a warrant. A departmental trial date is now set for mid-January. Haste has been on modified duty since the shooting and stripped of his gun and badge, but he still is drawing a salary. Another family seeking justice is the Ba family. Hawa Ba is one of the mothers of the movement. She has tears as she describes the death of her son, Mohammed, a 28-year-old student at a local college. He was shot dead by police who entered his apartment after a 911 call to get help for the young man who was upset and distraught.
We have lots of movement from the justice community, from the families and friends, from the Black is Back. It's a lot of movement for the execution and covering up for my son. Boy, I never have a justice yet. Since 2012, as you know, we are struggling getting justice for my son. From their own police report, they know they have 9 factors which they violate my son's right. They never hold no one accountable up to now. I need a justice. I was an independent woman. Trust America to send my son for school. He's not a slave. He was an honor student. He never had problem before the beating. People beating on the head. He had a depression. I know something wrong with my son. When he called me, he have so much dignity. He never tell me what's wrong with him. He was just calling me and talking things. I understand him and come. I arrive here. When I look at my son, I see it was 3 days before his birthday, 28. I know my son loved the islands. I tried to take him to the hospital before his 28th birthday for him to feel better. I asked a friend. They say, call an ambulance. They say, adult help. Adult help say, if he don't smoke, he don't drink, he never take depression medicine, if forbidden, you need to call the ambulance. I call an ambulance, police respond. I tell them, I don't call them, go away. They say, oh, mom, there's a way in New York. I'm an immigrant. I never know how they can act. I never know what they do before the murder of my son. When they kill my son, I think I don't know what to do. When I meet their mother in the country, I see I never know America before 2012. I used to come here every vacation, back and forth, helping my children, support them, give them a mother support. When the mother and my son, I walk around, I see on and on, choke hole, gun violence, everything what they can do to people, how I can trust them? And as the people who were supposed to trust, as the people who supposed to save us and protect us. I never have justice yet. I demand all of you people to help me demanding justice.
When Mohammed was finally loaded into an ambulance that day back in September of 2012, he was dying from 8 gunshot wounds, including one to his head. All police involved were acquitted of any charges. Mrs. Ba, a resilient mother, is very thankful for community members who have been in support of her and her family as they seek justice for Mohammed and for other victims of police violence. Whether body cameras could have changed circumstances is an open question. At a business breakfast this week, NYPD Commissioner O'Neill has said he wants all officers equipped with body cameras within the next 5 years. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. In other local news, it took 4 years of organizing, but there was a big victory for the Fight for 15. Today, after 4 years of organizing and 7 months of negotiations, 8,000 New York and New Jersey airport workers have won their first union contract. The tentative agreement provides important workplace rights and protections. These include seniority rules, scheduling protocols, disciplinary procedures, and health and safety guidelines. This under 11 airline subcontractors who have given their employees union recognition. It covers more than half of the subcontracted airport workers at JFK, LGA, and EWR airports. The contract sets a new industry standard for both New York and New Jersey workers. It provides a framework for unionizing subcontracted airport workers nationwide. The Fight for 15 and a union began back in 2012. That's when a small group of New Jersey airport workers began to organize for higher wages and union representation with 32BJ SEIU. The movement quickly grew. Soon baggage handlers, airport security officers, wheelchair attendants, skycaps, cabin cleaners, terminal cleaners at the airports and around the country took up the call for 15 and a union at our nation's airports. Hector Hector Figueroa, president of 32BJ-SEIU, said this is a historic moment for airport workers, not only in New York and New Jersey, but all around the country. It's been a long time since such a large group of workers have been able to successfully organize for union membership. Figueroa goes on to say this contract shows, despite a changing political landscape and ongoing struggle, workers will always find ways to come together to better their jobs and their lives.
On Saturday, December 17th, sing with the Nasty Women's Choir against Trump, organized by the National Organization for Women NYC. Now's Nasty or Nice campaign raises awareness about contraception in preparation for one of the most anti-choice administrations in recent history. Caroling begins at 12 noon this Saturday, December 17th at Washington Square Park. At 2 p.m., gather again at Bryan Park. At 3:30 p.m., gather at Columbus Circle. Go to nastyornice.org for the full map of caroling locations and lyrics.
And now some holiday cheer from the Nasty Women's Choir.
You better watch out, you better not hump. You better pull out, cause our president's Trump. Donald Trump is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's nasty and nice. Donald Trump is coming to town. He sees you when you're screwing. He knows which boobs are fake. He knows if you are straight or bi. Don't be gay for Pence's sake. Oh, you better watch out. You better not hump. You better pull out, cause the president's Trump. Donald Trump is coming to town. With little boy hands and little toy guns, Rudy toot toots and rummy tum tums, Donald Trump is coming to town. And Republican friends with conservative views, misogynist whites, supremacists too, Donald Trump is coming to town. The man at Fox News Channel will have a jubilee. They're gonna build a giant wall all around the whole country. Oh, you better watch out. You better not hump. You better pull out, cause our president's Trump. Donald Trump is coming to town.
And this is the news on WBAI in New York, and it's actually an expanded edition of the WBAI News this evening. Over 1 million people tuned into Our Revolution last night. It was a live broadcast of Vermont Bernie Sanders introducing his pick for head of the Democratic National Committee, Keith Ellison. The 53-year-old Michigan congressional representative was always against the TPP. On the Dakota Access Pipeline decision, he said, after months of protests, I'm inspired by this victory, by thousands of indigenous activists and water protectors and millions of Americans who support them. This is a victory, he said, for all people who fight for social justice. Ellison was fired up last night about the Democratic Party, what it needs to do and needs to become.
It's hard to imagine somebody like Donald Trump being elected president, but in a few days he will be the president. I don't know what stage in the whole spectrum of grief you may be at, but I think we need to arrive at acceptance that he's about to be the president. Yeah. And that means that each of us and all of us have to do every single thing that we can to protect our fellow Americans and to advance the cause of economic and social justice. We have to do it. This is a history moment, this is a movement moment, and this moment may well be the moment when the American people fought back to reclaim their democracy of, by, and for the people. Now, you know, Trump, you know, he ran saying stuff like, you know, more jobs, new trade model. He said it. He said these things. And as soon as he got in there, he said he was going to drain the swamp. Y'all remember that one?
Yeah.
Well, he's filling it up with lobbyists, billionaires, corporate executives, hedge fund managers, all these folks. We're going to have the richest cabinet ever. If you just had a few million, you'd be like the poor guy in that bunch. You know, he said he's going to fight for little people, but yet he puts a Secretary of Education, another billionaire, who is against public schools. When 90% of American school children will go to a public school, Betsy DeVos is not in favor of public schools and wants to privatize them. You know, he said he was going to help working people, yet his labor secretary, another billionaire, who makes his billions on the backs of low-wage fast food workers, is actually against the minimum wage and would lower it if he could. You know, oh, and don't stop there. He said he was going to improve our health care system, and yet his Health and Human Services Secretary, you know, Tom Price, wants to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, throwing 20 million people off health care. This is the cabinet he's picked so far. He said he was going to appoint the best and most qualified. And yet, Dr. Ben Carson admits he knows nothing at all about housing. He says it. I didn't say it. He said it. So I guess it's no surprise that he nominated a guy who says that there's no such thing as climate change, it's a hoax by the Chinese, to be the head of the Environmental Protection Agency at a time when communities are being washed away because the waves are coming up in Katrina and Sandy and all these kind of places, at a time when people are living in toxic areas all over this country. He picks an EPA leader who is not in favor of protecting people from environmental hazard. So people, we got our work cut out. We got our work cut out for us. You know, he said he would fight for workers, yet Republicans in Congress ended health care for coal miners. They said, you don't, mine shaft cave-ins, all the hazards of that job, and they're doing that, and he's even attacked. He had the nerve to attack a hard-working steel worker, local president. Y'all heard about that? All this man, Mr. Jones, was trying to do is to say that, look, you know, you say he's saving all these jobs, but you're not saving them all, and you're giving away the tax base of the people of Indiana to do it. Another corporate giveaway in crony capitalism. Even Sarah Palin saw that. Right? So the bottom line is he attacks this man on Twitter, which he likes to do to people all the time. So that's what the right wing is doing. The real question is, what are we going to do? That's always the question, people. What are we going to do? We can always count on them to say that rich people don't have enough money and the poor folks have too much money. We can always count on them to say the rich folks need one more tax cut, one more regulation they don't have to follow, and regular working people need one less thing that's going to help them make it through the week. Okay, so that's them. What about us? Are we going to hit the streets? Are we going to organize? Yes. This is what we got to do. And one of the main things we've got to do right now is reset the future of the Democratic Party. We got to reset the Democratic Party on the basis of grassroots activism. We got to reset the Democratic Party on the basis of working people who are striving every single day to make a better life for themselves and their families right here in America. I'm talking about Americans, white Americans, Latino Americans, Native Americans. I'm talking about Asian Americans. I'm talking about people who are Jewish and Muslim and Christian and Buddhist and Hindu and any or no faith at all. I'm talking about folks like you and me. I'm talking about folks like us need to say that the Democratic Party has got to be democratic, and it starts with getting some leadership in there that's going to fight for that democracy.
You're listening to U.S. Representative from Michigan, Keith Ellison, speaking last night at Our Revolution, presented by Democratic presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, as well as AFT, American Federation of Teachers Union President Randy Weingarten.
And I just want to say that if you will take up this battle and you will pledge to yourself and each other that your love for this country outweighs any beef you may have with anyone, if you will promise to yourself that you will work hard every single day to make this Democratic Party really work for the people, then we are not only looking at victory, 2018 and redistricting in 2020, we are looking at a generation full of success for working people. Republicans in 1964 thought that they were at the bottom and they were down and out. People said conservatism was dead as a philosophy because Goldwater lost to Johnson in a historic number. And yet those guys, they're so committed to making themselves more money and excluding people that they climbed back and they won, and then they won some more. And in 1980, they culminated in the election of Ronald Reagan. I'm telling you, I don't want to be like them. I don't believe what they believe. But I will say I do admire determination when I see it. And you and I better have the same level, if not more, determination for working people.
You've been listening to five-term Michigan Representative Keith Ellison running for the chair of the DNC on this extended edition of the WBAI Evening News. We'll go out with this holiday carol at the Union Square Holiday Market by Gays Against Guns. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Donnie the con man was a nasty, hateful soul. Just an angry man with a spray on tan, telling lies about clean coal. Donnie the con man did a job election day, telling old white men they'd be great again if they'd let him have his way. But soon they'll see how tragically he played them all for fools. He worked with spies to feed them lies, and he won by Russian rules. Oh, Donnie the con man says he wants to build a wall, and he'll get the dough out of Mexico, and the racists love it all. Chumpity chump chump, Donnie the Trump, this ain't a TV show. Chumpity chump chump, Donnie the Trump, off to hell we go. Donnie the con man says there is no climate change. It's a Chinese plot, it's not getting hot, he's totally deranged. Gay, black, or Muslim, say goodbye to civil rights. With the KKK and the NRA, he has got us in his sights. He'll beat us down to keep his crown, but we are fighting back. It's up to you, can we make it through this deplorable attack? Oh, Donnie the con man, in the end you'll have to pay. We will wave goodbye and we'll say nice try, and we'll send you on your way.
We're Gays Against Guns. We're caroling all of December to stand up to Trump and to keep the message that gun deaths are not going to be permissible, whether it's a Democratic regime or a fascist regime. Thanks for being here.
And your name is?
Mark Lydorf.
And people find out about you by going
on
to Facebook?
Facebook, Gays Against Guns, or Gays Against Guns. What's our website, Gays Against Guns?
NY.
NY.org, I think.
Yeah, .org.